Hi, good afternoon everyone. Today is Thursday, December 3rd, 2009. Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com. This is a community conference call which is being recorded. If you do not wish your voice to be recorded, please hang up now. Try to keep your identity confidential because this call will be recorded and will be put on public display for people to listen to. Also, just because we have answered questions, it does not mean we have agreed to represent you or that you have agreed to be represented by us. Unless we sign a contract with you in writing, this call means nothing other than just information based upon whatever circumstances you presented to us. Okay? Now, let me go over the conference call questions that people have already submitted. This is a question that comes up fairly frequently, that somebody's employment-based I-485 was sent to National Benefits Center. What happens next? Well, National Benefits Center basically, for employment-based people, acts as a distribution center for transfer of your case to an office local to where you live. So chances are extremely high that your case has been selected for an interview. You will be interviewed in the local office of INS. I have seen a lot of the interview notices come where either the employee is not working for that employer currently, it's a future employment case, or where if you are, let's say your company is located in Arkansas and you're working in California in cases like this when the record is not clear. So normally it could mean some amount of investigation is needed, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a problem. A lot of the local interviews end up being just a formality. Okay. What kind of documentation USCIS wants from you? They will let you know when they schedule you for an interview. Do they have a power to deny a case at NBC? I believe they do, but normally for 485 for AOS people, NBC sends them to the local office. Once you have a face-to-face interview, the case can be denied on the spot, or you can be given time to submit more information, or they can send you a formal request for more information in writing. They can, of course, also approve the case on the spot if the priority date is current. Once the case is sent over to NBC, where does one apply for EAD or AP extension? As far as I know, again, please don't quote me on this because I don't deal with these details. There are people in our office who keep track of all these things. But as far as I know, you apply to NBC for the EAD or AP extension. Of course, you can double check by calling USCIS customer service on that. Next question is, do you have written documents or blog which prepares for people to interview? Well, I don't have anything written down on it, simply because there are so many permutation combinations. But typically, these interviews don't tend to be very problematic for most people. So you will need to talk with your lawyers about your specific circumstances or concerns. Otherwise, there is not one shoe that fits all feet. I can't give you generic advice that applies to everybody. Okay. Next question is from Amar Wadi. He wants to know, he's got two H-1s, and one of the H-1s got denied. He was concurrently working for another employer, which is valid since 2010. So the question is, if my main H-1 gets denied, do I have to discontinue working on the concurrent H-1? No. You don't. I don't know of any law that says you cannot continue working on the concurrent H-1. That was your main question. So with that said, I know that you're getting married to a U.S. citizen, so that should actually take care of things even further. But your concurrent H-1B, which is good since 2010, should carry you forward. There's no problem that I can see, as long as you are maintaining your legal status on that H-1. Okay? Next question is Balaji, he got H-1 6 years expiring. Worked for an Indian software services company on L1 till March 2008. Joined a company who had sponsored H1. Switched to H1 in April 2008. Completing 6 years on L1 and H1B together in Jan 2011. Employer is not starting green card process because of layoffs. Wife is currently doing her PhD. She's on F1. I would like to stay in USA and work after January 2011. You cannot work after January 2011 unless you happen to be somebody who can qualify for an O-1 visa, being absolutely exceptionally qualified. So chances are you will not be able to work, but you can certainly convert to F2. You can even convert to F1. And if the school gives you a curricular practical training, you can also work a certain number of hours while you're studying. And you can apply for F2 while your wife is on OPT. Can my wife be on OPT when her employer starts the green card processing? That becomes a little complicated, but it can be done. Make sure you talk with your lawyers before you start the process. But can somebody apply for a green card while they're on OPT? Yes. Should they do it? That depends upon the particular case. Okay. Consultant 007 needs to understand their appeal, I-140 appeal was pending. The I-140 was denied. The appeal was filed. So there is a USCIS website says the I-290B notice of appeal to the commissioner was transferred and is now being processed at a USCIS office. So what does it mean? Well, what it means is when you file the appeal, the papers first go to the same officer of USCIS who decided your case. They have usually about 60 days to make a decision whether they want to decide the case in your favor or do they want to move the case up to the administrative appeals office. So it appears that your case has been transferred to the administrative appeals office. It is not a favorable decision. A favorable decision would have been if your case was reconsidered by the officer who first decided it, and instead of sending it an appeal, they decided the case in your favor and sent you an approval notice. Okay? There is no premium processing for I-140 appeals. And also, if an appeal is pending, you cannot use AC-21 because AC-21 is useful only if the I-140 is approved. Okay? You said you're willing to use our services. There's nothing we can do for you at this point of time. Unless you want to start a new green card process or you want to discuss your case, which I've already told you, there really isn't much we can do for you at this stage. Okay? So, but if you want to discuss your case in greater detail, you're welcome to go ahead and set up a paid consultation. Although I'm not sure that is going to help you much. If the case appears to be simple enough, I-140 denied, appeal is pending, where do we go from here? I feel you should certainly look at why the I-140 was denied and whether you should be doing a second green card at the same time. Because if that I-140 is going to fail, what is the point of waiting for it for 2 years and then have nothing at the end of it? So second green card appears to be something that you should consider very carefully. Okay? Next question is S. Kuti, who talks about visa numbers for EB3 India, dates advancing just by 1 week per month. Case has been pending for a while. They sent an RFE asking for more credentials. Service records show that this application is currently awaiting a third preference visa number. Once the visa number becomes available, your application can move forward. So here are the questions. What do you estimate? When do you estimate I'll get a visa number? Sir, I can't predict that. Nobody can. Question number two, does the response from USCIS mean that case is approved? No, of course not. Of course not. That is not what it means. When visa gets approved, will my husband, who's also an applicant with me, get his green card? Yes. Normally, you should both get green cards either at the same time or very close to each other. Next question is Sahoria, residing in India and H1 approved. Father passed away a couple of years ago. I'm the only son. 65-year-old mother along with my wife and kid is dependent upon me. Is it possible to get an H4 for my mother? No, sir. you cannot get an H4 for parents. But if you are the only support, you should be able to bring her with you on a B2. We have done this several times. And the consulate as well as USCIS permits parents to live with you when you are on H1, if you have circumstances that show that, you know, you are the sole support. They can easily give you a B2. That might be a possibility. She can come here, and then you can keep extending it based upon the fact that, you know, the same reasons that I just described. Next question is B. So by the way, we've done this several times, so I know that they'll give you the B2. And I'm not sure, you know, whether she's, if she's still in India. Oh, yeah, she is in India. I see that. Okay, yeah, you just walk into the consulate, explain the circumstances, and ask for a B2 visa. Okay? You don't need a lawyer for that. And once you get the visa, you come into USA, when you do an extension, you can basically do an extension based upon the facts that I just stated to you, that you are the sole source and she's dependent upon you for support, etc. You should be able to continue getting extension as long as you're on H1. The problem is once you get your green card approval, then what do we do? Well, that becomes a little bit more complicated. You can keep trying for B2 extensions. Okay? Next question is L1 to old expired H1 petition. I'm currently on L1, expiring in 2010. And earlier H1B was approved, and that expired in September 2009. Is there any way I can reactivate my expired H1B? Well, it's not called reactivation. It is basically an extension. Or even a new H-1B, you can file it through a new employer. You should be able to do that, and you should not be subject to the quota. Okay, so you can apply for an H-1 through any employer. As far as I can tell, you should not be subject to a quota. In case of a change of status to H-1, is it legal to continue working on L-1? No. No, you cannot. What if my current employer files an L-1 extension after my change of status date? If an L-1 extension is applied after your change of status, you will go back to L-1. But in between, you could be out of status because you would have an H-1 and you would not have worked on H-1. So that becomes complicated. If your dates of starting are not certain, instead of doing a change of status, I would recommend you do consular processing. So get your H-1 approval, but go get a visa stamp for H-1 whenever you're ready to start work. In the meantime, you can continue working on L-1. Next question is, Scroogey Doodle, H-1B with I-140 transfer. I've heard conflicting information on this. I'm on sixth year of my H-1B with my current employer who has labor and I-140 approved. Can I transfer my H-1B to a new employer? Will I be able to get a three-year approval? Yes. Yes. You should be able to get a three-year approval as long as your I-140 is not revoked. So the proper timeline would be, this is to the best of my information, you apply for an H-1 premium processing before you move over. You should be able to get your three-year H-1. You move over to the new employer. After that, if the old employer revokes your I-140, INS usually does not go back and revoke an H-1 that they've already given you. So you're good for 3 years. In those 3 years, you can start another green card, and hopefully that should take care of your situation. Sai for green card says, regarding applying for second I-140 in EB2 classification, old employer applied new GC labor for me and got approved. Now he agreed to file my I-140 in EB2. Is it a good idea to speed up the green card process to this? Okay, there's one problem I see in your case, that if your old I-140 was denied, USCIS should not have reopened your 485 and linked another I-140 to it. I think that's a mistake, so don't depend upon that 485. You might end up filing 485 again. Generally speaking, EB2 is, of course, faster. If you can get an EB2 application filed, that's a good idea. But what do we do when we have an EB3 and an EB2 from the same employer? That becomes a lot more complicated, and you want to talk to your lawyers about it. One of the problems is if the employer is small, USCIS can question whether there really exist two jobs, one in EB3 category and one in EB2 category. Second, also it can be an issue whether you intend to take the EB3 job if the EB2 case is being filed. So for some reason, if EB2 case fails, does the EB3 also come under question? All these issues need to be resolved. So generally speaking, we do apply for EB2 for beneficiaries who are working for the same employer, but we look at all these things and we weigh them and we discuss it with our clients before we go forward. Talk to your employer, talk to your lawyers about the availability of a job as well as the impact of the EB2 filing on the existing EB3 application. Okay? Of course, if you're going to change employers or go to a different employer and start an EB2, that is no problem at all. That you can do with your eyes closed. Okay? Next question is Rahima, who has a strange issue. Children's father became a citizen, and apparently children are eligible for citizenship, but he refuses to give proof of his citizenship. He does not want to give the naturalization certificate. Ma'am, I think what you can do is you can go ahead and file the paperwork for getting their citizenship and provide an affidavit of all the efforts you have made to try to get the naturalization certificate. Now, USCIS should, because they have proof of his citizenship, they should be able to dig out that information from their own records. Okay? And if they refuse to do that, then the next step would be, once they deny the case, is for you to file a lawsuit against the government and make them approve the citizenship. I personally feel that if you give an affidavit giving all the details of your problems and the case, the government should be able to approve the children's citizenship. Okay? So just file the paperwork, and instead of a copy of the naturalization certificate of the father, just provide all the facts in a detailed affidavit. How he was approved, how he refuses to give a copy of the naturalization certificate, how you have contacted the congressman's office, what they have told you, etc. Okay? Next question is Bob Basic 2002, traveling on parole. I have my 485 EB3 India application pending. Priority date is July 2004. I've got an advanced parole. I want to travel. What document should I take? Basically, just the advanced parole and your passport. Can entry be denied? Yes, but normally no. You have been legal all the way through. I don't think you have much chance of a denial. What happens if an RFE is sent while I'm in India? The RFE will go to your lawyer. It does not hinder your return. Only time you could have a problem is if the case is denied without an RFE by mistake. That can happen, but it doesn't happen very frequently. And the case can be reopened anyway. So, all in all, it's fairly safe to travel with advanced parole for a person such as yourself. R3 Gupta, I'm a Canadian citizen, married to a U.S. citizen, filed for I-130. The question is, how do I start work quickly? K3 visa or H-1B visa? H-1B visa premium processing is the way to go. So you want to enter USA to start work, go ahead and do an H-1B very, very quickly because the quota is running out. Unless you are working for a university, yeah, you've received offer as a research scholar. So yeah, you can, if you're working for a university, you can apply for an H-1 anytime. So, but the H-1 is the way to go. Okay? Next question, 6th year of H-1B, laid off after filing of labor from GILT. GILT says, my 6th year of H-1B will complete in September 2010. He's been laid off. Firm application was filed in June 2009, is pending. Will I be able to get 7th year extension? Yes, as long as the old employer does not withdraw your firm and they give you a copy of the screenshot of the pending labor certification, you can get an H-1 extension beyond 6 years, even though the employer is different. That's the only way I know. Next question, Imi Koras. This is a case where children of an applicant have received public assistance. And not even public assistance. What you should say is, you should say yes to that question and attach an explanation of what exactly happened. That you never availed yourself of the food stamps, and it was not for you and for the children anyway, and in any case, you never got it. Okay. That's the way I would handle it typically. Next question, SM001. He is living in, he's in the fourth year of his green card, living in California, laid off, moving to Maryland in December 2009. Okay, this December. Can I still maintain my California residency for doing your green, for your citizenship? No, don't do that. That becomes a lot more complicated. If you in fact want to live in Maryland, what you do is this, and double check this through a congressman's office. Typically, when a person moves, you have to have a domicile for 90 days, right? But unofficially, at least, USCIS has been permitting people to consider the 90 days during which the application was pending to go towards that period. So in other words, if I file my application today, I move to Maryland today, I file my application today, the application will stay pending for 3-4 months. In those times, the 90 days that I have accumulated, they will consider that towards the fulfillment of the requirement. Double check through a congressman's office, but I'm pretty sure that's what they are doing. Okay? As my wife and I would prefer to live together, what happens if I get a job in California a month or two after I move to Maryland? Can I return to California and still file for my naturalization? Yes, you should be able to, because you're maintaining your California residency. So you should be able to. I don't see any problem with that. I think what you need to do is make sure where you want to live. And once you're certain about that, contact your congressman's office about the 90-day period, whether the pendency of the naturalization application period can be applied towards the 90 days. Double check that and file the application. But don't do it this way that you're living in Maryland but you're applying to California. That becomes problematic. It may be even considered to be fraud by the government. Okay. Next question is new NEO. Current company A is not filing green cards because of recession. Company B has agreed to file green cards, but the H-1B was denied. They are filing an appeal and asking me to join while the appeal is pending. There is no right to work while an H-1B appeal is pending. No right to work. Okay? So, you cannot work. Appeal does not give you any right to work. That should take care of your issue, because you've asked me several questions about the right to work while the appeal is pending. The answer is, H-1 appeal gives you no right to work. Okay. Next question is, her husband had his from DHealth naturalization interview. There was an arrest for a second degree assault charges. He did not tell them that he actually hit his wife. He said he hit another person by mistake. The case has been expunged. What I don't know is whether there was a conviction, and how long ago was the conviction. This is a little bit more complicated than I can tell you in a few minutes that we have here. You may want to talk with a local lawyer where you are located. So I strongly recommend you get yourself a local lawyer and have them handle this case for you. Okay? Need help on WH-4. This is last question, Aaron. I am on H-1B visa. Employer is not letting me leave, nor paying me salary, not able to find a project. They have been asking you money to run your payrolls. That's fraud. Don't get involved with that. Definitely, you should complain to the Department of Labor. Department of Labor will recover the last 9-10 months' salary for you. You should also mention the fact that the employer took money from you towards training and payroll. They might want to refer that case to ICE, but that's definitely something you should tell the government. Now I have applied for change of status, which is pending. If I complain to DOL, would there be any impact on I-485 or on my future status? Yes. If you have been out of status for more than 180 days, your adjustment of status, I-485, can be denied. But if the being out of status was beyond your control, and you did everything you could to get back into status, such as filing a Department of Labor complaint, your 485 could be saved. Again, this is an issue you should discuss with your lawyers. This is not something that I can advise you in just a few minutes, because this could involve a look at your entire circumstances and some input from you as well about what you want to do. But filing a complaint against the employer would get you your money, and it would protect you to a certain extent for your 485 as well. Very good. Now, I have finished the questions that we had before us today. I will open the conference call for questions and answers relating to what we've talked about. Once we are done with that, any new questions I will answer only once we have finished answering the questions posted. Okay? So if you have a new question that you haven't posted, sit tight until I come to the end of the conversation. Anybody who wants to talk with me, press *6.
So Rajiv, question number one.
Yes, sir.
Follow-up question to the case where it has been transferred to the National Benefit Center is that...
Sure.
I didn't actually submit the AC-21 letter. Do you think I should be bringing that letter along with me if an interview is called?
No, I hate to do that. Of course you should bring it with you, but also FedEx the letter out to NBC.
Okay, so the same copy should be FedEx before the interview.
Yes, take two originals, bring one with you, and send one original to NBC.
Okay, and the other follow-up question is, assuming that there is just a formality that they're going over, do you think this case will be sitting there always till the dates are current at the NBC, or it will get transferred to the original center it came back?
From what I know, the way NBC, the way local offices move the cases, if they decide that the case is approvable, now I could be wrong on this because their procedures change so frequently. What I have seen is that if the case is clearly approvable, they should be able to approve the case and keep it locally until the priority date becomes current.
Okay.
If it is clearly deniable, they will probably deny it right there. Okay.
Let me rephrase that.
They will issue a notice of intent to deny right there.
Okay. So does that give us some time to reappeal?
There is no appeal. Against a 485 denial, there is no appeal. There is only a motion to reopen. Okay.
So that can be done on receiving that formal...
Well, what they do is, if they... Typical, this is the way it works. The formal and both the informal process. In the informal process, they'll tell you, look, your case is clearly approvable, we have no problem, but we need a clear copy of your birth certificate is not legible, send us another copy.
I see.
And that's just an informal request. Sometimes they'll even give you an envelope and say, just drop it by my office.
Okay. I see.
If it's a formal request, they'll say, you know what, your case is not approvable, we're going to send you a formal request for some more evidence, like an RFE.
I see.
And the third possibility is, if they say, you know, look what, we're not convinced your case is going to get denied, we are going to issue a notice of intent to deny.
I see.
And they give you 30 days or 33 days to respond.
Okay.
Okay? If the case is still denied, you have 33 days to then reopen the case, motion to reopen.
I mean, I don't anticipate in my case it is that complicated. It was just that we had my derivative.
Bite your tongue repeatedly. You never know what the government can make complicated.
Right. No, as I had mentioned, you know, on the derivative there was a shoplifting felony charges, but that was, you know, dismissed by the prosecutor, and we submitted the proof of all that. So right now, since we haven't received the interview official notice, we don't know what might be the reason to, you know...
This could be the reason. This could very well be the reason.
I see. So do you think we should get some additional document beforehand or the
sit tight until you hear from them.
What is the time frame, Rajiv, to overall, like once you...
Actually, different field offices have different time frames.
I see.
So you may want to contact the local field office, or you can even call the customer service, whatever information they give you. Think of it as a ballpark figure, not an accuracy.
I see. But do you advise to get any additional documents which they have not asked?
You really cannot. It is because there is almost anything they can ask.
So it is advisable to get everything that we have collected all over the years, like initially on H-1, then on the...
I really would not. I would just sit tight and wait for them to come to me.
So you're saying that the interview letter would clearly tell us what kind of documentation they're looking for.
That is exactly right. That's
right.
Exactly what they do. And they have this form letter that they send out, and if there is something that they that is not covered in the form, they actually handwrite it. Also bring this, you know.
I see. So I think initially we were able to track our progress because it was sitting with the Texas Center. Now when it goes to the NBC on the monthly, you know, processing time, there is no clue if the NBC is processing an AOS case. So that's why I was asking, like, you know, if it's going to sit all, you know, forever till the dates are current in the local office. Then
No. They should keep the case moving. Basically, NBC just acts like a distribution center.
I see.
The idea is the files get transferred to NBC, which then transfers to local office.
Oh, okay.
It should be just like almost like a stopover. It should not be, a layover forever.
No, the reason I ask because, you know, many people ask you, when my date is going to current. I mean, the way I'm from, September 2003, so I can anticipate easily like 6 years, if anything gets changed legislatively, it's going to wait till another 6 years, provided everything is all cleared. So within that 6 years, I was wondering, should I be always contacting like once and twice in a year to the local offices, say, anything?
No, you should see the movement of the file within a few weeks or months.
I see.
You know, what really sucks is that when I did my own green card, it used to take us end-to-end 6 months to process it. End-to-end. And the funny thing is, when I did my own green card, in those days, we used to, because I was working with another law firm, I used to fill in with one of the partners, and I actually had 3 or 4 interviews scheduled with the INS. So I went in for the interviews, and then finally I went in for my own interview. And this woman who was the adjudications officer, she looked at me and said, "Why are you back again?" I said, "Well, this time I'm interviewing myself." So, which was kind of funny because I had first gone with other clients. I was on an H-1 at that time. So those days, things were so different. But now, 9 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't anticipate. And the only reason, I was not even following the whole thing unless we got this, they subscribed to this website. So they keep on sending these emails, your case has been transferred. So. And I was saying, what if everything is okay and they tell us in writing that, we are sorry, we can't give you because your dates are not current, but everything else is all set. From that period to the actual production of card, what do you do? Where do you follow up?
You don't really need to follow up, but NBC itself is approachable if you have to, but that's just a layover. It's not something that's going to stop forever.
I have the right to ask them questions that, if they are my other background checks have been cleared, indirectly?
No. It's unlikely that they can respond to you. But once the file gets into the local office, you might be able to have your lawyers make an appointment and go in if necessary.
I think that's what I meant. Like, in case I call for into...
Yeah, like an InfoPass appointment. They might be able to give you some information. They may not be able to tell you exactly what is going on in the file.
But they could tell
you potentially, how long you can expect to wait.
Yeah, because, this is the first time we are getting a chance to talk to a human being. If at all the interview happens, we were thinking of taking this opportunity to ask, if the background checks have been cleared and all that, because these cases...
That much, they should be able to tell you with an InfoPass once the file gets transferred locally.
I see. All right, this is good enough. Good information. That's all I have. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Folks,
hello, Rajiv.
Hi.
Hello, Rajiv. This is Pratesh. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia, and... I'm thinking of applying an EB-1 EA category green card for my wife.
One second. You are a new question, so I'm going to have to ask you to hold till the end.
Okay, sure, no problem.
Yeah, just give me a few minutes to deal with all the people who just first posted their questions. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, Rajiv, I mean, my name is consultant 007 and my question number is 5.
Mm-hmm.
So this is regarding the I-290B appeal.
Right.
Now, basically, I read in some internet that, if the, notice from the commissioner is transferred back to USCIS office, then there is something like good news, but, I'm not sure.
Let me explain to you what they mean. The information that you have is correct.
Okay.
If Administrative Appeals Office transfers the case back, that means one of the two things. Either... they have agreed with you,
okay.
And they have approved your case or approved your appeal, which what is called upheld your appeal. In other words, you won, and they sent the case back for INS to issue you an approval notice. Or it means that the decision was based upon incomplete or incorrect assumptions.
Oh, okay.
It's called a remand. So if they remand the case, it basically means they want INS to do some more fact-finding and then make a decision again. In either case, it's a good news. But remember one thing. For administrative appeals office to do that on an I-140 case takes an average of 2 years. So it's very unlikely that they've acted so fast.
Sure.
Therefore, remember, going from USCIS to AAO takes only a few months, 60 days or so.
Sure.
Coming from AAO back to USCIS takes 2 years. So it is very unlikely that you've got the result of coming back to USCIS so quickly.
Sure, Raju. And another question I have is that I spoke to my lawyer and he's saying that, you know, we can refile another I-140. But now I have a question that, you know, when we refile another one I-140, then is it possible that, you know, we can do that in premium processing?
Very good question. I deal with these questions on a daily basis. Here's what I do. I do file premium processing. And I
okay.
make note on the file that you got the original labor certification. Okay?
Sure.
We are doing one this week. So far, we have not had to do that before, but we are doing one case this week where, actually two cases this week, where we don't have the original, these are other lawyers' cases. They came to us in appeal. And we are also refiling the I-140. A couple of things you need to remember. I am filing them premium because the way I look at it, maximum you can say is, no, I'm not going to give you premium, so what? You're not going to have me shot. Okay?
Sure.
And the second thing is, remember one thing. Under the current INS thinking, if you have an appeal pending, they are not supposed to approve your I-140. The second I-140 is supposed to be kept pending.
Uh-huh.
And they should send you an RFE saying, you have an appeal pending. Unless you withdraw the appeal, we are not going to act on this I-140. Okay?
Sure.
However, we've had cases where even though the appeal was pending, I-140 was approved. So all things said, it makes sense to file a second I-140. And I don't know what the ground of denial is, okay? It makes sense to file a second I-140, and it makes sense to file it premium processing.
Sure. The ground of denial, I mean, we have discussed this, Rajiv, that, you know, it's a success or an interest case, and now, if the refile is getting approved, then will they make my I-485 pending again, or how is that, Rajiv?
If the refiling is approved, you should at least be able to make the argument that the I-485 should be reinstated. I don't know if it will be, because the law on that is very murky, and the procedure is even more murky. But I think you should have a right to get the 485 reinstated.
Sure. Now, one more question, Raju. Now, the 485, it says that, you know, it's been sent to AAO for review, and the lawyer is saying it's not still denied, so you still have, the 485 still pending. It's just sent to AAO for review purposes. I don't know what that means.
No, I don't agree with your lawyer's characterization. They may not be thinking it through, but here is how it works.
Sure.
An I-140 is denied.
Sure.
Your 485, 765, advanced parole, everything is denied.
Oh, okay.
Okay? However, if because of the appeal, the I-140 is reinstated,
sure,
then everything related to the I-35 as well as the 485 is also reinstated.
Sure.
So, I-140 is dead, but it will be revived if the I-140 is approved.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure. Thank you, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck.
We can do.
Rajiv, this is regarding question number 4.
Yes, sir.
What are the implications of applying for a green card while you're on OPT?
What are the implications? See, that's a fairly lengthy question for us to talk about, but I'll give you the short 3-second version.
Sure.
When you have applied for a green card, you have basically exhibited immigrant intent.
Right.
And an F-1 is not a dual intent visa. It does not permit you to have dual intent. So if you travel and it comes up that you applied for a green card, they could potentially refuse you admission into the United States, right?
Oh, okay.
Okay. There are other issues also. I mean, I'm just giving you the 3-second version. But it's a little complicated issue and it should be carefully considered. Sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Thanks a lot,
Rajiv. Rajiv, I'm asking this is number 5, follow up on that one. Yes, my case 485 is pending in Nebraska.
Okay.
And we had a RFP 90 days back, and we submitted the reply for that.
Okay.
And the case is not moved to NBC. And now the status shows that the application is currently awaiting a fifth reference number.
Okay.
So do we have to follow up to move it to NBC? Or
if they give you, send you a notice that they are moving the case to NBC?
No, nothing.
No, not all cases are moved to NBC.
So does this mean that if the visa number is available, we will get our 485?
I don't know, sir. That depends upon whether your case has been pre-adjudicated or not. Some cases have been pre-adjudicated, which means that everything is done except for the visa date being current. So million-dollar question is, can you find out if your case has been pre-adjudicated? Give INS customer service a shot.
Okay.
Okay.
And one more thing there. See, I applied for my parole, advance parole, and since there is an error thing, they blocked everything. So because that is not approved now. So is there anything I can do on that one?
But you already responded to the 485 RFE, right?
Yeah, that's right.
This should be once the RFE is decided, they should make a decision on all applications.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Next question.
Rajiv, this is a Pratesh. I'm basically in Alexandria, and I'm thinking for applying.
Not your time. Give me 1 minute. I will get back to you. I promise.
Okay.
But I have to finish off people who already posted their questions.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is the first time, so I'm not accustomed to the procedure.
It's all right. We are very informal. I just have to maintain some sense of order, so I can at least be fair to people who already posted. Sir, anybody?
I apologize.
Yeah,
no
this
problem.
Is SM001, Rajiv.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had posted a question regarding my naturalization.
Okay.
And this is, being on the fourth year of...
California, Maryland.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember
California,
that.
Maryland. So with that being said, you had actually said that I could talk to my congressman's office to actually waive...
No, it's not waive. It's not a waiver. What happened was, USCIS, somewhere along the line in the last 15 years, relaxed that 90-day rule only to the extent that if those 90 days, your application was pending, we will allow you to use those 90 days towards qualification.
Understood.
Okay. However, I'm not sure about this because I haven't looked back into this rule for a while. So what I'm saying is just have your congressman's office double-check that for you.
Okay. Perfect. I can definitely do that. Along those lines, I have another question. Since I was laid off for at least about 7 months, how is that going to impact? I know, I've read quite a bit that it normally should not impact. But
there is no impact. There is no impact. There is absolutely no impact.
Perfect. So that means I think the key is pretty much find the job. Where I'm going to be.
Just decide where you want to take your shoes off and hang your hat. That's what you got to do.
Perfect.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Anybody else, folks?
Can I come jump in, Rao?
Pratesh, go ahead. There's nobody else.
Sorry, I apologize. This is the first time.
It's all good.
Yeah.
So you are our neighbor. You are in Alexandria, okay?
Yes, I'm very close to your office. Mm-hmm. So the thing is... I just found out yesterday that my wife could be eligible for EB1 EA category, which is she is an international dance performer, and she has performed in several countries. She has won several awards, and she's performed in countries like Germany and Australia and Hong Kong and all that. So, and she has a lot of documentation as well. So one question I have is dance a category in which you can get EB1 EA?
As far as I know, yes. I don't see why not, because I think it is arts, and arts includes all performing arts.
And has there been cases in past you have done?
I don't recall having done a dancer's case before. We've done plenty of musicians. I can't remember dancer. I might have. We've been in practice since 1993 by ourselves. So in a couple of decades of practice, I'm sure we've done some cases, but I don't recall off the top of my head. I think we did one for a prima ballerina. But I'm not sure. I don't remember off the top of my head. The answer to your question, can a dancer qualify for EB-1 extraordinary ability? And the answer is, in my opinion, yes, they can.
Okay. And with these, I mean, she's not won any internationally acclaimed awards.
That's where you're going to have a problem. I mean, I was writing a note on a very accomplished musician from India.
Mm-hmm.
We did a note on him in our, you know, cases from our sample, cases from our files.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to our website, you can see all the cases on EB-1. And in his case, he's a very accomplished performer. He's got national and international awards. He was Grammy nominated. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they denied his case. I was really personally offended because, I can really, he's a flute player. I play the flute myself. I know how good he is. So I, when I looked at the denial, I was personally very, very offended. I said, this is nonsense. So I told these folks, I said, listen, I will refile this case. I will even appeal this case. And I won't charge you anything for it because I feel so strongly about the case's approvability. So we filed the appeal. We lost the appeal. Even the appeals office did not think that we had enough. I refiled the case. And now we just won. About a couple of months ago, we just won the case. I just did not give up. So the point is, don't think of this as an open and shut case. It takes a lot of effort. If you don't have national and international, you can imagine. I mean, Grammy nomination should be a recognition by itself, right?
Yes, that's true.
And they said,
yeah, one single thing and it should kill everything, that's true.
Right, but they said, well, he didn't win the Grammy. You know, look at this. Look at the internet. Look at all these performers. Look at all these artists. Even a nomination is considered to be a national honor. You don't have to actually win it. Being nominated itself becomes an award.
Mm-hmm.
People have mentioned on their website, Grammy nominee. Why are they doing that? If it is not an honor. First time around, they didn't agree with me. Second time around, they agreed with me.
Oh, okay. So, okay, another question is, does that make sense to go to EB2 and IW category?
Look, if you are going to do it, do both. I don't like EB2 because it takes forever and 5 years. You know, it's just too long a process. EB1, one of the cases that we did, door-to-door was 3 months, even with the RFE.
Yeah, that's true. EB1, you don't have to file labor and anything. Just
not only that. I mean, think about it. We did EB1, even with the RFE, from the date of the filing to actual approval of the 485 was less than 3 months.
Okay, we have got some strong letter on the line saying that, you know, from government we had that, you know, my wife is a distinguished personality and she is a talent.
I hate to be a naysayer, but it's a very long shot. Just by listening to you, I can tell you that. She may be very accomplished, but does she rise to the level of EB1 EA? Because in EA, what are they looking for? The top 1%, the very top 1% in your profession. If you can demonstrate that, remember, they have all those 10 criteria out of which you must meet 3.
Yes, yes.
But if you don't meet any of those, you can still qualify if there is something else in your resume that puts you ahead of other people, but it doesn't come under the usual 10 requirements.
I was looking at all these 3 requirements, and she has strong paperwork for requirement 3, 5, and 7. So she has strong for at least 3. For others, she has not that strong.
Well, you don't have to
something.
Meet anything more than 3. If you meet 3 very strongly and nothing else, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, she has the newspapers, you know, her news in, like, the best.
So why don't you do this? Why don't you send me her resume through the contact us form? We don't charge for resume review anyway. So instead of taking other people's time, you and I can discuss it separately. So I'll give you my input on what I think you should do.
Perfect. That sounds excellent.
Okay,
sure. Thanks, Mr. Rajiv.
You're welcome. Just call me Rajiv. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, folks. Anybody has any other questions? Very good. Good talking with all of you.
Do you have a minute to discuss more about the green card, applying green card on OPT?
We have all of 13 minutes. You can, we can talk anything you want. No problem at all.
Could you please elaborate more on the implications, right?
Oh, the implications of the F1 and green card. Well,
right.
Here are some of the things I worry about. I worry about the travel. You know.
Okay. I mean, as you mentioned to the previous caller, the end-to-end, she will be able to file her green card on EB-1, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen her resume. I don't know.
No, actually, she finished her PhD. She'll be finishing her PhD.
Just because you have a PhD does not mean you will get an EB-1. Absolutely not.
Oh, is it so?
Not at all. Well, here's what I want you to do.
Okay.
You need to send me an email. You can do it through the contact us form.
Sure.
And just say, Rajiv, in the conference today, you had mentioned that you're going to send me some cases that define what EB-1 category is.
Okay.
I'll send you 3 cases from extraordinary ability and 3 cases from outstanding researchers.
Yeah.
Once you review it, you will have a reality check on what INF is asking for.
Oh, okay.
Just because you're a PhD does not mean you're going to get an EB-1 approval. No way. Not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So don't bank upon that.
Oh, okay.
And like I was telling Pratesh, the gentleman who was talking with me earlier, you have any questions, you want me to take a look at her resume, you're welcome to send it to me because we don't charge for that anyway.
Okay.
You know, having a 15-minute consultation with me for the resume review might be a good idea after you've read the cases. That way we can, you know, put things in perspective.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, once she finishes her PhD, probably she can apply on EB-1.
You don't know if it's going to work or not.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was one of my concerns. And, you know, these are the things, for example, let's say she's got her OPT, then she wants to extend it for another 15 months. If she has in between filed a green card, the extension could be a problem.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so these are some of the things.
So, but since the dates are current, we should be getting an EAD in 3 months or something like that, right?
You are not thinking long enough. I'm saying, what if the green card is denied?
Okay.
You have no way of knowing whether the green card is going to get approved.
Okay.
So we have to prepare for the worst case scenario, not the best case scenario.
Right.
I always tell people, expect sunshine, but bring your umbrella with you.
Okay.
Right? Just think about that. Okay?
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for your
time. Anybody else have any questions?
Yeah, I've got one. Regarding the SAN number.
The SAN of what? Sorry?
Yeah, regarding the visa number, because it is moving only 1 week in 1 month time. So
oh, sir, I don't know what is going to happen there. Nobody does.
Is this done by the State Department? Or?
Yes, it is done based upon a prediction made by Mr. Oppenheim, the only man who knows what's going on, in the State Department. And it is a statistical projection of visa number demand for the following months and years. Okay.
Rajiv, this is Bob.
Yeah, Bob, go ahead.
This is regarding the B2 visa.
B2.
In one of the questions you answered, like you are the only support for your mom or, you know.
Yes. There's a physician, a physician client of ours. We've done like a gazillion things for him. He actually had a similar situation. His father is old, and he didn't want to send him back. So we just got him a B2 extension based upon the fact that he has got nobody in India to take care of him. So we're going to keep him here as long as we need.
Like how many times? Like you can keep.
I think this time they gave it to us only 6 months, but the regulations should allow you 1 year at a time.
Oh, you can extend for a year every time you extend?
Yes, sir. At least you should ask for a year. And they should give you 1 year at a time.
And you can definitely give the reasons like there is no support outside India. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Be honest about it. Don't try to make any, fancy case.
Okay.
Satyamev Jayate. Always tell the truth.
Sounds good. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else? Very good. It's always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for being here.
We have one moment. Like, I can ask you one more thing. Like, okay, you know, you already told about the EB-1 criteria, like there are, like, you know, few things which we need to consider, but still, you know, I just want to ask you that dumb question since you have, like, few minutes. I have been traveled to South Africa and Australia for, like, a couple of months in business visit, like, during 2000, and I'm working in a company, like, a lead right now for the past 4 years, and I've been waiting my green card for the last 4 years in EB-2. Do you think I have a chance of applying in EB-1 because I traveled different countries?
Why would you think that merely traveling makes you eligible for an EB-1?
That's why I ask you, like, I'm so dumb.
No,
I don't know the exact idea about EB-1.
Here is how,
then, 10 years of experience and you have like, you know, traveled like different countries, like you can...
Oh, no. That's not at all a ground for EB1. Not at all. Go read the EB1 on our website. It'll give you a good idea of what EB1 is. And if you have any follow-up questions, post me a comment on the website. I'll respond there.
Sure, definitely. But does it again goes by the salary also? Like, what if you get like more than like 200K? Does it go
well,
like category?
See, it depends upon your job category. If everybody in the job is getting 200K, then it's not a big deal. But if everybody else is making 50 and you're making 200K, it could be a big deal.
Okay. So what exactly is the designation for EB1 like in general EB1, IT? Like?
EB1 comes under many categories. But the basic idea of an EB1 is that you are one of the top, maybe 1%, the very top of your profession in the world.
Oh, I see.
The idea. And then they have given some methods of determining how they put you in that category. What do they look at? Okay. And then there are those 10 categories out of which you must meet 3. And if for some reason your profession does not fall under those categories, you can have similar evidence. Okay, so EB1 is not that easy. It is definitely a much more complicated issue. And also remember, EB1s are very heavily tilted towards academicians, people who are in the universities and professors and researchers. Not always, but definitely there is a heavy bias towards academicians.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Good luck, folks. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello?